So how have you worshiped this week?
I know Dusty said that a lot of times, and I know Gary just reminded us as he was praying, the idea of, if it's of God, let it stick. And if it's not of God, let us forget it and not worry about it. While that's true, I'm going to be careful with that from now on. Because I think that the problem is, most of us don't remember what anybody said on a Sunday within 24 hours. Unless you have notes, and you look at the notes, and you focus on what was said, nobody remembers what anybody said. So I have to be very careful about that prayer now. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad prayer, but we need to be careful, because sometimes don't we dismiss things a little bit too easily? Oh, I guess since I didn't remember it, God just didn't really speak, so we got an issue. I've decided I would rather not say anything than say something that God doesn't want said. Sometimes in people in the history of worship, as the church has developed, there was a sizable time, and maybe I misinterpret this, so hang in there with me. One of the reasons why there are such ornate, beautiful, intricately artistic houses built for worship were because they expected people to be quiet in them. Does that make sense to you? Because the idea was to communicate God's awesomeness through the beauty of what was built. So all those stained glass windows, all the architecture, the idea was to draw people to an upward focus, an outward focus beyond self. And for that, I like the thought of what that was, that intention. In our tradition, the reason why we generally have pretty stark environments to worship in general, okay, is because we sort of reacted to that ornateness and that architecture and that artwork and that, and we said people were making that somewhat iconic, and were making a place that ended up being the thing that was appreciated and worshipped as opposed to God. Does this make sense? So, who's right? Can both sides be right? Can both sides be wrong? Is that an important question to at least think about? Do you understand what I'm talking about? Everything that happens in worship is not always supposed to be thrust upon you. Does this make sense? There's a part of us that we are supposed to come and in some way engage with God. That's what worship is. So last week when I talked about Isaiah chapter 6, you may have heard some things that you hadn't thought about before, or some things you knew that were true, but you really hadn't thought about the implications entirely. So I want to read the passage again, and I've got some questions. So there, in that momentous time in Israel, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord, high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two wings they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And no, I do not understand the symbolism of the wings. I just know that two of those wings had to be in back somewhere doing some work, or else they wouldn't have been floating. Okay, but I'm sure that there are people, many, many people who would, if you found the right books, it's kind of like, I don't always know everything, but I have books that do, and probably books that would tell me many, many different things about that, and you can find them probably just as easily as I can. And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of His glory." And at the sound of their voices, the doorposts and the thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. It's interesting that at that point, as Isaiah perceived this going on, that the thing that impressed itself upon him was, God is not like me, and I am not like God. He is holy, He is righteous, He is all-powerful, He is God, and I am not. So he said, "Woe to me, I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. I always thought it was kind of funny. He had to take the coal from the altar with tongs, but he put it in his hand to touch Isaiah's. Just one of those. Thought it's kind of cute. "And with it he touched my mouth and said, 'See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for.' Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send and who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here am I, send me.' And he said, 'Go tell this people, be ever hearing but never understanding, be ever seeing but never perceiving.'" Now, you know, the end of that, we're going to get to, actually, it's a little depressing if you think about it, what God was saying to Isaiah. Who needs to go? And Isaiah says, "I'll go." And then he says, "Isaiah, the job isn't going to be quite so easy, because you're going out into a dark world and you're going to be telling them, just keep on going like you're going. See what happens. You just keep doing it. Watch where it takes you. You don't listen, you're going to reap the benefits of not listening." Not because God wants to punish them, but because that's what happens when we rebel. That's what happens whenever we're calloused. That's what happens when we're not soft-hearted to God. Okay, so my questions for the day. As we look at this passage, what is the focus for most of what is called worship in the American church? Okay, music, okay. When people come to church, what do they come to church for? Come on, be honest. Okay, we go where the going's good. Well, boy, their music's great. They have super musicians. It is. Singers are great. What else? Okay, people go to worship because they expect in some way to walk away with something from worship. So, what is the logical answer when they feel that worship no longer delivers? What is the answer then? Let's keep going. What are some other things that people focus on whenever they come to worship? Okay, community. Now you'll notice, listen to me. None of these things that we're talking about are necessarily bad. Understand, they're not bad. They are a part of what God created us to enjoy as His people. The problem is what's on the throne. The individual, okay? So what are other reasons why people, or what do they focus on when they worship? Okay, the air conditioner's got to be working, right? The lights have got to be on right so we can see. Oh, we got to get out at 12. Why do we have to get out at 12? We can beat every other church that's out at 12:05. We don't have to wait in long lines. Message, now Brian said the message has got to be pleasing. You've got to like what you hear. So what do we mean when we say that? Okay, it could be something that's going to make us feel good, all right, about ourselves. Okay, that's a possibility. What else? Okay, something that doesn't necessarily make us feel bad about ourselves, okay. Already? Okay, don't want to be challenged. Gotta have the leaves too. The leaves make the food, if I remember my photosynthesis. Yeah. Tammy, stretching, do you want to talk? And you'll notice that is not, I mean, we do tend to go in those directions, okay?
Jesus fed 5,000.
I understand. That's not where I'm going with this today. This is not about big church versus little church. But there are some things about some big churches and some little churches that are off in terms of the focus for what it should be about. There are people, I believe, that are in those those types of places because they do want to feel that they have, in quote, done what they're supposed to do. And like many Americans, no one's going to come knock on my door and ask me for anything. Now, that isn't church. It may be going to worship, but it's not church. And we could draw a distinction at that point between what is being a part of the body and what is going to a event. Does that make sense? Okay. And that, you know, the body of Christ is to be more than an event. If you look at the New Testament. Russell. So one thing that we really kind of hadn't talked about that I think is also a different dimension to some of this, it's not that some people do sincerely come and encounter worship in our culture, but what they want, it's not that they don't want to change, it's that they want somebody to tell them how to change. So one of the problems we get is we then put somebody up on a pedestal as the person who's going to give us, forgive me for the analogy here, but be somewhat of a self-help guru. What three steps do I have to take so that my life will change? And in doing that, we remove the Spirit of God from what is happening in worship. And again, it's just as self-centered as anything else that would be focused about, you know, me coming to worship for myself. Does that make sense? The word that we have danced around as we've talked about a lot of these things is the word consumer. And that is, most folks who have a misunderstanding of worship come to in some way consume as opposed to worship. So when the music isn't, you know, you don't like the songs, or you don't like the preacher, or you don't like whoever did whatever, or you don't like what they do with the kids, okay, yes, the truth is you ought to be in a church where you feel like your kids and your family can flourish, wherever that is. But that doesn't mean that it ought to necessarily be the best product delivery system. Okay? But anyway, you getting where I am on this? Okay. So the problem is that the focus in a lot of what goes on in worship in the church, in the country that we live in, misses the mark. I'm not saying that there aren't any good churches. I'm not saying that there aren't people in churches that I would have struggles with that don't have a great view of what worship is about. Mixed bag. But the reality is, a lot of what goes on in America that's supposed to be worship is really a consumer delivery system. And ought not be. Second question, John. So, what are the things that influences this? Okay, what's caused this inappropriate focus in worship? Relativism. Okay, so tell me what that big word means, Mike. Now I'm gonna be honest with you. I think that this, aside from the discussion of entertainment, that people came to worship for many of the same reasons that people come to worship now. There were people who came to worship for God to intervene in their lives in the first century. There were people who came to worship to be looking for God to heal. There were people who came to worship for answers in the early church. So I'm not trying to denigrate the fact that the world, which is dark and is seeking answers, that they would be drawn to God for those answers and for that change. That's not a bad thing. It's just we have to be careful. And this is one of the things that is a challenge for churches that consider themselves to be evangelistic, which we are. And that is that we end up trying to deliver to people who have needs and who are looking to have those needs somehow taken care of by God. And sometimes churches have then changed what they do and their focus in order to focus on those needs as opposed to on helping those people meet God, who's the one who can take care of all those things. And if it's that I need to be in some way set in motion to be the answer for that person, then the issue is it needs to happen in me, not them. Does that make sense? Okay. So do you think we've talked enough about these influences? Yes, Beth. People who are thirsty and people who are hungry. People who really want to be surrendered to God are drawn or should be drawn to a place where it is evident that God is at work. That's healthy. A lot of times the problem is, what are the things that define for us that God is at work somewhere? Because sometimes people interpret that as a numbers game. God is at work someplace where they baptize 120 people a year. God is at work someplace where they baptize 3,000 a year. God is at work in a place where the music is awesome and people spin with flags in the aisles. God is at work in a place where they're sending people to other countries every year in dozens or more. God is at work in a church where people go out and minister on the streets every Friday night. You see how tough it is to decide where God is at work. But yet, that's not a bad thing at all, is it? None of those things are bad. All those things are outward bound and are good things. But if our worship is going to be life-changing, our worship has to be focused on the God who is in all that and authors all that, and then be submitted to that God, and then God can work in me, and He can work in you, and then He's at work in us, and then people want to be a part of that because they're hungry and they're thirsty. And it doesn't have anything to do with the mega jumbotron up in front that everybody can then see the guitarist picking all his stuff. You understand what I'm... All right, John, next question. How can we do a better job of focusing on the Lord in worship? Okay, come prepared. Hang in there while I have this discussion for a second, because I'm just talking. I've been on the face of the planet since 1960. Okay, so I'm pretty much in the modern end of the 20th century is my frame of reference. Okay, but I have this idea that when people expected to come and give money at church, that there was some intentionality about presenting something to God sacrificially. And I think that a lot of that, even though it's a temporal monetary preparation, it was preparation nonetheless. And now that we have no longer really intentionally done that a lot, I'm not looking at any one of you and saying anything about any one of you in this, okay? What I'm saying is that in general, if you look at how things have changed, people don't prepare, they don't intend to bring anything and present much to God. And that's a problem in worship. So it's a matter of being prepared in a lot of ways. So that's just an illustration. Okay? Hang in there. Because there was a time back whenever I was born in the 60s, probably in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, where there was this huge emphasis on giving. And there are some places today in the city of Savannah where there still is a really big focus on giving. There are churches in Savannah that say, we want to see your W-2s, and we want to make sure you're giving your tithe. There are. They are churches focused on who Jesus is. And I'm not criticizing them. If people want to submit to that, then more power to them. But for us, the idea of being prepared, the idea of coming to present ourselves and who we are and what we have to God and saying, it's yours. How can we do a better job of focusing on that in worship? So being prepared before we get here is important. And I would love to be able to say that I know that I'm always equally necessarily prepared to do what I'm supposed to do on Sunday morning. I mean, there's some Sundays that I'm much better prepared and that I've prayed over it more. It's not that I've never thought about it, but there's sometimes I don't know this is exactly what God's going to do, but I know that I'm done what I'm supposed to do to be here, to be ready to do what I'm supposed to do with you. Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying is that as attitudes about those things have changed, I think that also it mirrors the attitude of what we're supposed to do whenever we gather to worship. If we worship because God is worthy, and we worship because that's just what we're supposed to do, we are created. We were created to worship this God. Okay? We worship not because we feel like it, not because we can afford it, not because it makes us feel good. We worship because He is God. And He said that we're supposed to get together to do this. Now, the problem is anything else out of obedience, if we check out on that, we'll check out on giving, on tithing. Because, see, there was this time early in my Christian life where I didn't really give 10%. It was more like 3 or 4. Because I hadn't been hit upside my head with a 2x4 yet about the fact you just do this because God gave this stuff to you and you just give Him the first tenth and you just don't worry about it. You just don't think about it. You just do it. You just do it. It's the same thing about what worship is. It's about putting God on the throne, and you just do it because it's what you do when you say you're God. And He said, do this, so we just do it. Now, yeah, okay, we want to play that game if we're going to talk about money for a second, for funds, okay? There is nothing in the New Testament that says, go give 10%. You're right. I'm with you. It's not there, okay? But I would think that something that was as much ingrained into the concept of who God's people were, that Jesus never said, don't do this. He didn't say, oh yeah, that one's off the list now. Now, He didn't say, do it, expecting to get something back. The whole idea was, you just do it because it's the first 10% and God gave you what you got. So you just do it. That is anathema in many places. And the reason why is because the whole idea of what worship's about is so skewed. Because it's no longer about God. You hanging in there with me on this? So the money stuff is just a symptom of the issue. Yeah, Mike? We all should be bought into and concerned about whatever we can do to make sure that God is the one who's on the throne in our worship. Yes, Beth. It was a preparation, but it was not a preparation to offer anybody's self to God. If we're offering ourselves and all that we are and all that He's given to us, and we are presenting ourselves to Him in worship, then we're saying, what I've got is yours. What do I do with it? And what He's already told me is a lot of things I'm not doing. It's kind of like, let's go back to first grade. What was it that I told you in the beginning that you ought to do? And, you know, we who have said that we have tasted of the grace of God because of Jesus Christ, who died on the cross in our place and then sent His Spirit to live within us and bring us into His family forever, if we cannot acknowledge that everything we've got and everything we are is His, then we have a real worship issue. Because I know a lot of people, you know a lot of people who are churched who say, it's my stuff, I worked for it. And I can choose to be obedient or generous or not. You're right. Well, there's congregations that are like that, that's true. And that's the wrong spirit. We all agree. Because that's not about presenting to God. That's about saying, I've paid in, I have my influence. That's self-centered. Oh yeah, we all have. If you've been around as long as some of us, you know. All right, we're going to keep, can we keep talking about this next week? I've got like another three or four questions that I kind of want to work through. Is this okay for you, or do you want me to move on and say, Ricky, you've shot this horse and it's dead?
That's very important.
I agree with that. That's why I like this format. Okay, so worship one more Sunday. All right, we'll finish up with this then on next Sunday. All right, Anthony, why don't you close us?